Chapter 5. It was late at night when the captain put his head round the door of the roundhouse and said, "Come out and help pilot the ship." "Is this one of your tricks?" Alan asked with a frown. He still didn't trust the captain, and was not going to leave the roundhouse if he thought it was a trap. "Do I look like I'm trying to trick you?" "The brig is in danger, so I have better things to think about," the captain tutted angrily at Alan. The look on his face and his tone of voice told both Alan and I that the captain was not planning anything other than saving the ship. The sky overhead was clear and the wind blew hard and cold. There was a great deal of lingering daylight, but the moon was already shining brightly. We were sailing around the southwest corner of the island of Mull, and the sheets were hauled close. It was not a good time to be sailing the ship. Although we were moving fast, there was no danger from big waves or pressing storm, so I began to wonder what it was that weighed so heavily on the shoulders of the captain. As we rose to the top of a swell, the captain pointed to the leeward side and cried, "Look!" To me, it looked like a fountain that was rising out of the moonlit sea, and a low soaring sound followed it. "What do you call that?" the captain asked us gloomily. "The sea is breaking on a reef. You know where it is. What more could you want?" Alan asked crossly. "If it is the only thing, then nothing," the captain said as he spoke. A second fountain leapt from the sea further to the south, and the low roaring followed. "There, see for yourself. If I had a chart, or if Mr. Shawn was alive, we would be fine, but I have neither. You will pilot the ship." "These must be the Torren Rocks," Alan said. "Are there many of them?" the captain asked. "There are 10 miles of them, from what I can remember," Alan replied, as the captain and Mr. Riatt looked at each other with concern. "There is a way through them, I suppose," the captain sighed. He didn't sound too confident. "Doubtless there is, but where, I seem to remember, that it is clearer under the land," Alan said as he scanned his memory for any information that would help. "We'll have to haul our wind then, Mr. Riatt. Take the ship as close to the island of Mull as you can," the captain sighed, and Mr. Riatt went to carry out his orders with what remained of the crew. Mr. Riatt went aloft to look for dangers ahead of the ship. He shouted down a few times to change course to stop the ship hitting the reef. After a while, we had gotten around Iona and were now alongside Mull. We seemed to be clear of the reef, but the tide was now making it hard to steer the ship. The captain had just begun to thank Alan for saving his ship when Mr. Riatt called out, "Reef to windward!" As he called out, the tide bought the brig and threw the wind out of her sails. The ship span around and struck the reef with such force that it threw all of us flat upon the deck and nearly threw Mr. Riatt from the mast. I got to my feet straight away as the tide was hitting the Covenant and driving her further onto the reef. Mr. Riatt came down from the mast and got the skiff ready to put to the sea. He filled it with food and water. The heavy seas made it hard to row against the tide, and the waves kept threatening to throw us out of the boat, but we kept going. Only Hoseason and the men, too injured to leave their berths, stayed on the ship. He seemed to have lost his mind as he clung to the shrouds, talking to himself. The brig was like his wife, and the loss of her was the loss of him. The men stuck in their berths screamed as the sea rushed into their cabin. Before the skiff could be launched, I was thrown into the sea by a wave. I came up and found I had managed to grab hold of a broken spar. The tide carried me from the brig very quickly, and I soon found that I was in the shallow water of the shore. I walked up the beach. I was extremely tired. This was the unhappiest part of my adventures. It was a cold night, and I didn't dare to sit down in case I froze to death, so I took off my shoes and walked in bare feet on the sand. I listened for the sounds of life nearby, but all I could hear was the surf crashing on the shore. I stayed awake all night, and when it was morning, I put my shoes back on and climbed a hill by the beach. There was no sign of the brig in the sea or the skiff. On the land, I couldn't see any sign that any men lived there. I was worried about what had happened to Alan. I was also worried what might happen to me. I was on a barren island of granite, surrounded by salt seas. There was no sun shining either, only damp mist that made me even colder than I already was. The only food I could find were limpets and periwinkles amongst the rocks by the sea. I couldn't make a fire, so I had to eat them raw. I had nothing in my pockets but gold, which wasn't useful on a barren island. I had just finished eating the raw shellfish, then I started to vomit. I tried again with the same meal and kept it down the second time and felt stronger for it. I slept by the rocks for shelter, and it was there that the shellfish lived. I could see the island of Iona from where I made my home in rocks and lived in hope that someone would come and find me. Iona was too far for me to swim without help. The spar washed back out to sea after I landed on the beach. On my third day on the island, the sun came out and I lay on a rock to dry myself when I saw a small boat sailing past the island. I got up and cried out to them, but they just laughed at me and sailed past. I couldn't believe how cruel these men were to do such a thing to me. On the fourth day, I discovered why they laughed. The men sailed back and stopped a little way off the island and told me that when the tide was out, I could walk to the island of Mull. If they had not come back, I would have died on that pitiful island. I had lost all but 3 guineas and a shilling in the sea. But I also had a silver button that Alan had given me from his coat. I could barely walk, but now I was on the Ross of Mull. The land was rough and I didn't know where the roads were. I could see smoke rising in the distance, so I walked towards it and found a house at 6 o'clock in the morning. There was an old gentleman in the house. He was smoking a pipe. He didn't speak much English, most Gaelic, but he told me that the men who had left the ship had been at his house the day before. "You must be the lad with the silver button," he said to me. "I am the same," I replied. "Well, then you are to follow your friend to his country by Torosay," he told me. Then he introduced me to his wife and made sure I had plenty to eat. I slept until noon the next day in a soft bed, and then the gentleman and his wife gave me breakfast before I left. They wouldn't take any money from me and even gave me a hat to keep the sun off my face. The people of the Highlands were all friendly but seemed terribly poor. It was illegal to wear Highland dress now, so they were forced to wear clothes of the lowlands. Some walked about naked, except for a cloak, and carried trousers on their backs like burdens, as they were all unhappy about this law. There were beggars all over the roads, and the clan chiefs no longer had open houses. I asked the way to Torosay, but nobody spoke English. It got close to night, and I found a lone house that wouldn't let me in until I held up a guinea. Suddenly, the owner of the house spoke English and agreed to give me food, drink, a bed for the night, and take me to Torosay the next day. The next day, he took me 5 miles to the house of a rich man to get my guinea changed, so I could pay the man his shillings. We had lunch with the rich man before we could go, and I had to sit and listen to the Jacobite toasts and Gaelic songs until they both went to bed that night. It was 8 o'clock the next day when my guide was finally ready to leave the house. We hadn't gone very far when my guide tried to cheat more money out of me. When I refused, he tried to attack me with a knife. I punched him and took his shoes and the knife. I left him lying on the road. I came across a beggar a little further on. He told me that he was blind and a catechist, but I could see the steel butt of a pistol sticking out of his cloak. I told him about my guide, and he offered to take me to Torosay for a drink. We walked along the road together, and he tried to ask me if I was rich and where I came from. I kept a distance between us so that he couldn't steal the money from my pocket. When he couldn't get close to me, he tried to strike my legs with his stick. I told him I had a pistol and would shoot him if he didn't leave me, which he did, cursing me in Gaelic as he went. I started walking again and was happy that I was on my own, thinking that I had just met the two worst men in the Highlands. I reached Torosay and found an inn. The inn was run by a MacLean, a member of the Appin clan, and a high-born family within it. In the Highlands, to own an inn was even more genteel than in the Lowlands. I think it must have something to do with either the hospitality or the trade itself. The MacLean of the inn spoke good English, French and Latin as well as Gaelic. He played word games with me. He easily won when we played in French, but we were equally matched in Latin. These games put us on friendly terms, and we drank together until he was so drunk that he wept on my shoulder. I discovered that he had a grudge against the family and friends of Ardshiel and probably hadn't seen Alan. I told him the stories about my guide and then about the catechist on the road. "You're lucky that you got away from him. That is a very dangerous man. Duncan MacKay is his name. He can shoot by the ear at several yards, and has been often accused of highway robberies and once for murder," MacLean told me. The worst of it is that he called himself a catechist, I said angrily. It was the MacLean of Duart that gave it to him because he was blind, MacLean told me. When MacLean could drink no more, he took me upstairs and showed me to a bed. I lay down, feeling happier than I had since I had been kidnapped on the Covenant. I had travelled across most of the island of Mull, 50 miles as the crow flies, and another 50 on the little island, so I was more than a little fatigued. I was far better in heart and health of body at the end of the long tramp across the Highlands than I had been at the start of it. I thought that I was much safer now, too.